Texas America and the world. This is Mark Dankoff from the Dankoff Report, coming to you live on the Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org on this Friday, the 7th of June at 1 p.m. Central Time. We certainly greet everyone who was listening live. We also will be greeting everyone who will be listening later from a variety of posts, presumably around the globe, especially in the Middle East and in Russia. In this particular case, my special guest is Patrick Slattery, and I'll just mention a couple of things briefly, and then I'll ask Patrick to join me. There is an interesting interview that will be posted with our roadmap this weekend. You'll see just a couple of links on that roadmap now, which has already been sent to RBN for publication with this show after the fact. All of the individual links that I think you need to see and that I am more than happy to provide for you, which are all ready to be posted, except I need to do it. And I haven't had time to do it. And so I will get that done certainly for you this weekend. But there are several stories that absolutely are striking in terms of what I'd like Patrick to comment on. The first is this. The Southern Poverty Law Center has added some people to its so-called hate map. You know who they added? They added a bunch of physicians in the United States and possibly elsewhere who oppose transitioning children into another gender. So if you are a doctor who opposes gender transitioning by surgery for minors, you have now been included as a hater, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. And of course, those people don't like me. They don't like Dr. Duke. They don't like Dr. Slattery. They don't like a lot of people. And so today, if you're out there listening to this and you are a fine surgeon and a fine pediatric surgeon who opposes gender transitioning by surgery for children, you now join all of us in terms of the haters that exist in America. And, of course, if you oppose Jewish wars around the world, including with what's going on in Gaza and in Rafah, presumably you are a hater, as that is defined by the Southern Poverty Law Center and also by the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. If you are someone who thinks that Vladimir Putin is absolutely our choice for man of the year, both in terms of absolutely providing a level of misery for the Western international order that includes, on Putin's behalf and on Putin's instigation, a return to older Russian civilizational values that are not communistic, that are not a part of the Jewish Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, but are a return to a Russian orthodoxy of the pre-communist period. That obviously, in terms of identify who the backers of global homo are and their hatred for Putin, this explains a great deal of this, of course, as Joe, who called into Patrick's show earlier, just a handful of minutes ago, was alluding to some of this. So, again, if you're our traditional values surgeon who also has some semblance of understanding of surgical ethics and medical sanity, you've now been included with the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map of haters. So just be aware of that, folks, if you're out there, that this is how far gone these people really are. There is already posted on the roadmap as the first of a series. Yes. Yeah, sure, so come on in.
If you are this, then you are a hater. If you are that, you are sounding kind of like Jeff Foxworthy. Right?
Yes.
If your back porch collapses and more than three dogs are injured, you just might be a hater, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
That's right. And boy, I tell you, folks, in terms of the Republic Broadcasting Network, I presume that our network has all kinds of people listed with the Southern Poverty Law Center, as well as the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. I have come to presume that, for example, if you are white, if you are male, if you are exclusively heterosexual, if you are exclusively in favor of monogamy, if you are someone who legally owns a firearm and attends any kind of traditional church on Sunday and believes in the triune God and has never voted for a Democrat and who opposes LGBTQ during Pride Month, you are a hater. So this is where we are with these people. And of course, as I've mentioned on the show many times, you go all the way back to 2008 in that miserable campaign that year between John McCain and Barack Obama. My old buddy Chuck Baldwin of the Constitution Party, of course, was running as a third party candidate for president. And it emerged that year that as far as these federal law enforcement fusion centers are concerned, folks, if you don't know what these are, check this out in terms of search. Federal fusion centers, you'll discover that these are centers for federal law enforcement working in conjunction with state law enforcement at the highest level and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. You go back and check what these people produced in Missouri in 2008, and in the state of Missouri, this federal fusion center there produced a report in conjunction with both the FBI and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith that said that if you were white, if you owned a gun legally, if you were in favor of traditional marriage to the exclusion of LGBTQ, quote-unquote, relationships and marriage, if you would be inclined to vote for a presidential candidate like Pat Buchanan or Chuck Baldwin of the Constitution Party or Ron Paul, that all of these various things suggest that you ought to be profiled as a potential terrorist, domestic terrorists in the United States. Now, according to that Missouri Information Action Center, or MIAC report of 2008, produced with federal law enforcement and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, they had to withdraw this pretty quickly when the existence of this report and some of its contents leaked. But make no mistake about it, folks, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith and the Southern Poverty Law Center are part of a larger assault on all kinds of people whose demographics and whose ideology politically and theologically does not match that of global homo and the new world order. So that needs to be underscored here. And of course, if they don't already have Dr. Slattery listed, I'll call them up and insist that they develop a file on him just so he can be brought up in the prestige category in regard to alt-right activists.
I don't know if it was Southern Poverty Law Center or the ADL, but one or the other has me listed as David Duke's right-hand man, whatever that means.
David Duke's right-hand man. Well, that is very, very significant in terms of, I think I also seriously read about you as David's right-hand man in Mother Jones several years ago. So, there you have it. That means that you're a great radio tech with another fine alt-right network, and you're also on here with me, which means that, you're an absolute hater, Patrick. you're done when it comes to global homo and the new world order. But suffice it to say that the good news may be that it is global homo and the new world order and the Jewish power structure in the United States that are on the ropes now, folks, and struggling both in terms of what Vladimir Putin is providing for them in Ukraine, as well as what the Iranians and the Chinese have cooked up with Putin, presumably, and as well, all kinds of things going on domestically and internationally that suggest that the Bretton Woods financial regime and the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world and the American military as the enforcement arm of the New World Order, that all of that, presumably, it's on its way into the toilet. And the great irony is that for those of us who listen to this network and to this show, that's essentially a good development because it means that maybe the old American republic can be recovered and constitutional government can be recovered if in fact we manage to avoid a nuclear conflict. What's your perspective on that, Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, my perspective is a lot of people, remember fondly the America of their childhood, America that they were taught about in elementary. You remember when we used to hear America never lost a war?
And of course, always a good thing. Yes.
Leaders of the free world and all of this. And the thing is, if you're a white person, and especially if you're the type of person that's on your Foxworthy style list of that are haters, according to Southern Poverty Law Center, we're currently stateless people. We don't have a country. Like the Palestinians, frankly, like the Ukrainians, don't have a country. It's been hijacked.
Yes, and I think that needs to be underscored. You know, I will reference once again my latest op-ed piece for VT Foreign Policy. It's also on my Mark Dankos Catacomb page at WordPress. And now our own Republic Broadcasting Network has posted it, and I greatly appreciate that. And that is my Memorial Day 2024 remarks, referencing a young man named Lyle Marvin Jensen, Lieutenant Lyle Marvin Jensen of Hamburg, Iowa, who graduated with my parents from high school in Hamburg, Iowa, in 1938. At that time, by the way, I checked this out in the records, Hamburg, Iowa had something like 2,100 plus people in it in 1938. Statistics as of maybe 2 years ago show that either 850 or 870 is now the population of that border town right on the Iowa-Nebraska Missouri line, on the Iowa side of it, of course. What's that? Dr. Slattery was on his way between Kansas City and Omaha, and he pulled off, and his wife was with him. They pulled off and visited the Fremont County Freedom Rock. My dad's portrait is painted on that rock, as well as three or four other military personalities from Fremont County, Iowa. Interestingly enough, Lieutenant Lyle Marvin Jensen is not on that rock, and he lost his life in World War II right after high school. He graduates in 1938. He is killed October the 2nd, 1943, in combat in Italy. Now, in this particular case, if you read the piece that I wrote that's been up there since Memorial Day, there are all kinds of things that are striking, both about Lieutenant Jensen as well as some potentially revisionist history of World War II and so forth, that at least from my perspective, my own ideological perspective, contradicts the good war ideology of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt advocates and Tom Brokaw of NBC News and all of these other folks that have, in my view, romanticized the Second World War and basically have provided an analysis of that war that is very idealistic and quite mythological from my perspective. And I think the whole point of my op-ed, and I think Dr. Slattery sees where I'm going with this, the whole point of my op-ed is that what so many of these types of people, talking about my father, talking about Lieutenant Lyle Marvin Jensen, talking about my dad's younger brother who was a PFC in the United States Marine Corps, saw terrible combat in the Pacific Theater during that conflict, that all of these folks thought they were fighting for what the Hamburg Reporter album of World War II refers to as the preservation of freedom and the American way of life. I don't think it quite looks like that now, Patrick. What's your take on that?
Well, you and I both are sons of World War II. And my dad passed away many years. I have no idea what he would. No, I have a lot. I have an idea what. It's just hard to imagine what he would think of looking around. And I remember as a child asking him something about world, and you know, well, I guess I asked him once, you know, who's the greatest person ever? He said Jesus. I said, okay, who's the worst person ever? He said Hitler, and I said, why Hitler? And he said, because he tried to take over the world. It had nothing to do with Jews, but he tried to take over the world. And, you know, it's kind of sad. I wish I could say that my dad, and my dad was not somebody who ran down on day after Pearl Harbor to enlist. He was either drafted in 1943, or he enlisted knowing, perhaps he enlisted knowing he was about to get drafted. He did sign up for the Burma Theater, which is a nasty theater. Didn't go.
China, Burma, India, CBI. I knew their chairman here in San Antonio for many years, Colonel Dave Withers, who passed away some years ago. But he was the San Antonio chair of the China, Burma, India Theater crowd. They used to meet yearly for all kinds of stuff related to what was known here locally as CBI. If you mentioned CBI, people knew what you were talking about.
Yeah, it was China, Burma, India Theater. I remember that. He didn't go. He had bad heart, bad eyesight, and wound up, and good language skills. He wound up being sent to Georgetown and then worked always at Japanese military code translator. But at any rate, what I want to ask you, what did your dad say about Hitler? Did he say Hitler was trying to take over the world? Did he say anything about the Jews and the Holocaust? Why was he fighting in World War
II? He didn't say a great deal about that, frankly. And of course, for many years, he was a Republican. He chafed at the notion that FDR had been a party to setting up a conspiracy that would result in the Pearl Harbor attack. In later years of his life, when he was still capable of reading and didn't have any issues related to kidney failure or a little bit of dementia or whatever, I gave him some books to read on that subject, as well as the Kennedy assassination, where it forced him into a revision of some of his ideas. We will be back with Dr. Patrick Slattery on the Dankoff Report, live from San Antonio, Texas. Stay tuned.
Stars in the sky.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love love, the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Health Simple with Kalwara Shilaji, fact bit number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yoga vaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the Gold Mountain and Medical Symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
I can't hold it on the road when you're sitting right beside me and I'm drunk out of my mind. Merely from the fact that you are here. And I have not been known as the saint of San Joaquin, and I'd just as soon right now pull on over to this side of the road and show you what I mean. Than anyone I've ever known. And I can't hold my eyes on the white line out before.
We are back on the Dankoff Report, live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network on this Friday, the 7th of June, 2024. You're listening to the late, great Eddie Arnold with July, You're a Woman. That comes from his Standing Alone album for the RCA in 1970. That's starting to be a very, very long time ago. Patrick, are you there?
I'm here.
You are there. Okay. Patrick's.
Okay. Am I better now?
Yes. There we go. We have Patrick. And you're surely both on somewhat remote locations today. We're not in our usual studios, and RBN is doing a good job, technically, of keeping this show going based upon the fact that both Patrick and I are hiding out for some debt collectors. Anyway, in terms of what we have been talking about, Geopolitica, which is, of course, a Russian site that does English language publishing. There's a new interview that has been published with the great Eurasian expert Alexander Dugin. I don't remember the name of the fellow who produced or who actually did the interview. He will be credited in the roadmap at some point this weekend. But this fellow who interviewed Dugin had an introductory paragraph before the interview began, where he stated as follows: the West is spiraling into chaos. Russia is recovering its civilizational greatness, quote unquote. Interact with that for me a little bit, Patrick. Do you basically agree with this? And are we in a transitional period in history? Specifically, is this Russian-Ukrainian war leading us into a wider transition in history that its proponents in the West could not have foreseen? How do you read this?
I mean, I think Alexander Dugin's right. Russia is coming much, it's really coming into its own in a way The Russian Empire before the Bolsheviks was a big deal. It was one of the great powers of Europe, but it was always behind. It had the biggest population in Europe. It had the biggest land mass in Europe, but it was always kind of crippled. And then you had the Soviet Union, which was one of two superpowers, and they had nuclear force, and they were one of two superpowers, but they had this irrational economic system that was like shackles around their ankles, so that they couldn't provide a standard of living for their people that was anywhere approaching what was in the West. But Russia today, and then Soviet Union broke up. Russia, was it John McCain who called it a gas station with a military attached to it or something?
Yeah, I think the direct quote from our late state god John McCain, the quote that I have read over and over again, has McCain saying, "Russia is a gas station masquerading as a country," quote unquote.
So, but Putin, he revealed that within the next week or two, the IMF or one of these big economic, which puts out data on countries' economies. They are looking at Russia in its GDP. There's different ways of measuring the GDP, but one way is called PPP, purchasing price parity, where they factor in price levels of countries. Because, for instance, a haircut in Germany might cost $30, and a haircut in India might cost $3. But it's a haircut's a haircut. And when you factor that
now a haircut in General Custer's time was free, as I understand it.
Yeah, well, it could be a bit of a close shave.
But
purchasing price parity. China's the biggest economy. United States would be second. India would be third, and Russia would be fourth. Russia would have a bigger economy than Japan or Germany. So Russia is now it's being recognized as not just a major military power, but a major economic power. And
yes,
and this is thanks to the sanctions. Had there been no sanctions, Russia would have remained a gas station masquerading as a country, and it would have been just kind of a cold Arab oil state. It would have been a cold Arab sheik, Gulf oil sheikdom or something like that. With a cold climate. No brakes. Okay. Yeah, there's no brakes on this train. This is a runaway train. So that's why I'm agreeing with Dugin. It's coming into its own in terms of being a military power, an economic power, and it's completely rational. It's not behind, it's not primitive, there's no asterisk there like there was with the Soviet Union and its communist system. No asterisk like Russia being peasants and serfs and illiterate, even though it's big. No, it's fully come into its own in a way that it never had before.
That, to me, I think you're exactly right. And as I look at the events just since February of 2022, when this Russian-Ukrainian war began in earnest, you had a situation then where there was a lot of questioning.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
Yeah, okay.
No, we're hiding from our creditors. You don't hide from your debtors.
Yes. I'm hearing creditors in the background. Okay. in terms of everything that's happened since February of 2022, clearly the sanctions have totally blown up in the face of these neocons and Zionists running American foreign policy. It has totally exposed the West to what it could not have imagined in regard to the fact that this has only helped Russia economically. For me, as I watch this whole thing transpire, there are three things that are particularly striking to me about this whole business of Russia just in the last couple of years. One is that when you consider where they were 30 years ago in the Yeltsin era and look at where they have been since 2000 with Vladimir Putin, you look at the incredible advances for Russia in terms of military technology, whether you're talking about hypersonic missiles or drones, or you're talking about the fact that in terms of aircraft, artillery, and armor of all kinds, they are more than holding their own with anything that the West has given Zelensky. And this has in turn revealed what I think is perhaps the most impressive aspect of the what is going to be a Russian victory in Ukraine is not simply the way in which they've turned the tails on the United States and the West as far as economic sanctions, but as far as military industrial production capacity. I'll repeat that again, military industrial production capacity. Russia is absolutely beating the pants off the United States and the Western world, as that is being illustrated in this Ukrainian conflict. Classic example, take the whole business of artillery shells, 155-millimeter artillery shells. Russia is believed by all credible sources to be able right now to produce 4.5 million of these shells a year. That's thought to go to 5.5 billion in the next 6 months. The United States and our and its so-called Western allies supporting Zelensky are thought to collectively be able to produce no more than 700 to 800,000 of these artillery shells on a yearly basis. That's just one example of what I'm talking about here. But as you start looking toward Iran and China, is the other countries that could well figure into this with Vladimir Putin's Russia in regard to a larger conflict. It's not only impressive to watch the Iranians in terms of their advancements militarily, their advancements in terms of technological research. But then when you add China to this, Patrick, in terms of population, in terms of productive capacity, and the known strength of their military, it seems to me that you've got a situation where the West has suddenly bitten off more than it can chew. Is that your perception of this?
Yeah, it is. And that's something that I didn't mention, but I should have mentioned. Russia coming into its own, in not just in terms of military, not just in terms of economics, but in terms of diplomacy. It's got better diplomatic relations with the world than it ever has before. And China is key to this. The thing is, here's one thing. Russia is hated by the West. Why should it be hated by the West? It's not communist anymore. It's the only white country of any consequence. It's the only one. America, France, England, these are all formerly white. They're formerly white countries where white people are. Just turn on your TV. Just look at the internet. Just look at billboards. All you see are blacks and diverse people. And if they show whites, half the time they're going to be gay anyway. And why are they doing that? Because that is the elite. That's the establishment. And yeah, mixed race couples and all that. That's the elite and establishment saying, this is not your country, white man. It's not. So we don't have a country anymore. Russia is the only white country of any significance. Should it be a surprise that a white country is capable of running itself well? So and here's the thing. You mentioned earlier in the show a prospect of perhaps regaining some sort of constitutional republic. And that is predicated on the Zio West, the Jewish-dominated West, being displaced as the global hegemon by a multipolar world largely led by Russia and China. A lot of people don't like China, but Russia and China are the ones that are big enough to place this Jewish-dominated entity that the United States has morphed into. It's not the United States of America anymore. It's the United Colors of America. It's the rainbow flag. So, yeah, that's how I see it, Mark.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. So if we look at a lot of Americans, ironically, not simply Americans of our age bracket, Patrick, and older, but even younger Americans who continue to look at Russia and China from an older Cold War model that I argue bears no resemblance to where we are now, and that I'm constantly telling people that discuss these things with me privately, that the great paradox is that godless Russian communism, if we choose to use that that phrase from the old Cold War days, has suddenly become the pre-communist Russia in regard to the renaissance of Russian Orthodox Christian ideology. And that in conjunction with Russian demographics, white Russian demographics, would explain why their resistance to the New World Order and global homo, certainly based in national sovereignty, but based in a national sovereignty that emphasizes the older Russian culture, the continuity with the centuries, as well as the renaissance of a Russian Orthodox ideology that absolutely has the global homo Jewish neocon hatred going in a way that's
Hello? I still see his smiling face,
What is this constant interference behind in the background? What is that interference in the background? Us. Okay.
You're back.
Are we back?
We are back.
Very good. You can hear me okay?
Fine and handy.
Good. We have had visitors from outside the network, as has also been the case, by the way, if I might divert just for a moment. VT Foreign Policy has their chief editor tells me that they have been subjected to an incredible amount of interference and hacking in all kinds of different directions that has intensified in the last couple of weeks. I think we're also looking at that kind of a situation in regard to at least this show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. So I think you can see where somebody out there, might even be the NSA here in San Antonio, doesn't like the contents of the show. But at least for now, I think we've got this corrected. Patrick, in terms of what we were discussing, and I think our caller Joe in the previous hour was alluding to some of this, are we to understand this Russian-Ukrainian conflict in terms of the fanaticism of these Zionist neocons like Victoria Nuland and the lady that's going to be her replacement, apparently, as the Undersecretary of State, and that is one Julianne Smith. That lady's background will be up in the roadmap this weekend. It's a very disturbing background that indicates she's just another clone of Nuland. But these folks, to me, I think there is a very definitely a religious aspect to this conflict in regard to the desire of this overwhelmingly Jewish cabal to destroy Putin's Russia, and specifically to destroy the Russian Orthodox Church, Does this explain what's been going on with Zelensky and his persecutions of the canonical Ukrainian Orthodox Church? It would seem so.
Yeah, you know, he is destroying the Russian Orthodox Church, and that has been on his agenda since this war started. Zelensky was not a longtime politician or political activist. He was a comedian, and he was a TV actor, and I kind of wonder about him because his he ran for president as I suppose you would call it the puppet of Igor Kolomoisky.
Yes,
who was a media baron, and I don't even know what Igor Kolomoisky's agenda was. He's Jewish, but the relationship between Zelensky and Kolomoisky got very messed up after he became president, and I believe he stripped Kolomoisky of his Ukrainian citizenship. Now Kolomoisky would still have his Israeli citizenship, but there was a rift between them. And when Zelensky ran for president, he ran as the peace candidate. He ran as somebody who was going to improve relations with Russia, and he was elected by the strength of the votes of Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine. So the people who had voted in the past for Yanukovych voted for Zelensky, but not just them, because like when Yanukovych was running against I guess the previous election, he had run against
Poroshenko.
So he ran against Tymoshenko, the Yulia Tymoshenko, who's kind of hot. If
yes.
You remember her?
Yes. Yeah.
And that was the last, the 2010 election. And it was, and then before that, he ran against Viktor Yushchenko in 2004. And those were close elections. The one between Poroshenko and Zelensky wasn't even close. Zelensky won, and he had pretty much the universal support of Russian speakers. So what happened? And I don't know, but my guess is that his administration wound up getting hijacked, especially after Biden became president. It got hijacked by Victoria Nuland. And you know, Blinken, Wendy Sherman was working there too. The Jew crew at the State Department, they hijacked it. And I have the feeling that Kolomoisky, who is a billionaire, probably would have been happier with good relations with Russia because he could probably make more money that way. So I don't know. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm in over my depth, but that's how I see it.
Well, tell me, this is not an idea that originated with me. I know Alexander Dugin of the Duran is just one of the people that has emphasized that when it comes to
not Alexander Dugin of the Duran, but Alexander.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, I was seeing if you were on your game. Anyway, Mercurius is constantly saying that these neocons, he never gets into the whole issue of neoconservatism and the amount of Jewish involvement. There is a neoconservatism because essentially it was a Jewish movement that created the whole neoconservative school, going back to Leo Strauss and others. But that's a diversion. But Mercurius, in talking about neocons, neoconservatives, is always saying that they don't know how to reverse course. They don't know how to modify. They don't know how to recognize when things are not working. The only thing that they do, the only thing that they know, is to double down on what's already not working that has produced the problems to begin with. Now, looking at this lady that apparently is going to replace Victoria Nuland, and her name is Julianne or Julie Smith, Sputnik has done an excellent job, and it'll be on the roadmap this weekend, of articulating exactly what her educational and professional background is. It's a neocon all the way. And are we, again, looking at who this person is that's going to replace Nuland? We seem to be looking at more of this refusal to reexamine and to reevaluate, so that when you look at where this nonsense has already put the United States in regard to BRICS, in regard to the dangers to the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world, the exposure of America's productive deficiencies that would not have been the case in the Second World War, start looking at the American national debt, the increasing diplomatic isolation of the United States and the West because of these absurd policies that they will not reverse course on. What are we to make of this? I mean, do these people believe that eventually they will succeed? Or are these people simply psychotic and psychotically deluded? Or are they actively trying to finish destroying the West in some sort of larger game that I haven't quite figured out? I mean, it's one thing to destroy a country like the United States demographically and culturally. They are well on their way to having achieved that. Some would say they've already achieved it. But how can they possibly believe that their policies vis-a-vis Russia and Putin and the Russian-Ukrainian war are going to work, or that they can continue with these policies knowing that Iran and China are more than ready to team up with Russia? I mean, what's going on with these people?
And this is why it's important to specify that neoconism isn't simply just some sort of political philosophy or ideology. It is fundamentally Jewish. It is a Jewish movement. And there are people who aren't Jewish who are involved in it. But it is a Jewish movement. And that means that, you know, what are the traits of Jews as a group? One of them is paranoia. Another, and this is why somebody like John Mearsheimer really can't get it right. I like listening to him. He says a lot of things, but he misses a lot. And he's a realist, so he's always looking at things as states have interests, but he can't explain why the United States is doing things that are clearly not in the state interest and that are backfiring, and they keep doubling down on when they backfire. But the thing about neocons is they're Jewish. It's a Jewish movement. They are not loyal to the American state. They're loyal to the Jewish people. That is, and I'm not trying to be mean, and I'm not trying to be hateful or anti-Semitic, but that Jews are first and foremost concerned as a group with their own group interests, and their group interests don't have to they don't have to align with the majority population of the states that they control, and they don't have to align with the interests of the state as an institution either. They're cosmopolitan. They will move from country to country. They are concerned mostly about group interest. And I think so it's a combination of that and fundamental personality traits like being paranoid, thinking everybody hates them for no reason, being unable to look at their own responsibility for why people might have problems with them, being kind of delusional and messianic. Norman Finkelstein had an analysis of what he calls Jewish supremacy. He doesn't want to talk about Zionism. He wants to talk about Jewish supremacy, that Jews, and he was talking about it in terms of what's going on in Israel, but really going beyond, but not just Israel, but Israel supporters, that Jews are better, they're superior, their lives matter more. If people don't like them, it's because they're jealous. That's the only reason. And so I think this is really fundamental to neocons. And it's hard to make sense of it if you don't bring in the Jewish aspect of it.
Exactly. And that to me, I think, makes all the sense in the world. And I would simply add to what Dr. Slattery, I think, has correctly diagnosed as the issue. Murray Friedman's book on neoconservatism, some years ago, I read a great review of the book written by E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars. But Murray Friedman's book on neoconservatism makes it clear that neoconservatism is a Jewish movement. And his last name is Friedman, folks. I mean, how do you say that he's an anti-Semite, right, if using the contemporary definition of that? So I think that's the first thing that we have to say, is that there's all the support in the world, including Friedman's volume on neoconservatism, for what Dr. Slattery has just told us. There are two corollary concerns that I have based upon this first one that make me extremely discouraged, if you want to put it that way. One is that when I look at the sources that I consult, good sources, dealing with the Russian-Ukrainian war, it's an excellent analysis of that conflict from a point of view that is fair and that I think does not demonize Vladimir Putin, that is very critical of Zelensky, very critical of this neoconservative foreign policy. Who are we talking about here? We're talking about Mercuris and Christoforou from the Duran, talking about the New Atlas and Brian Berletic of the New Atlas. Larry Johnson, certainly our ex-CIA analyst over at Sonar. I'm trying to remember the exact name of the West Sonar 21, I think, .com. Dealing with Colonel McGregor, all of these different sources that I consult, that I have a lot of respect for. To my knowledge, not one of them is willing to say publicly that neoconservatism cannot be understood except in terms of a Jewish movement, and a Jewish movement that emphasizes Jewish racial and ideological supremacy, and that it is this movement, this neoconservative movement, that I don't hear many of these sources, if any of them, ever admitting is not only a the equation of neoconservatism as a Jewish movement, which I think is entirely fair and provable to me, based not only on Friedman's book, but more recent manifestations, Victoria Nuland being the poster lady for this. But when we start looking at the demographic changes in the United States, being facilitated especially by Biden's open borders policy, where there are some 7.5 million illegals in this country now, just since Biden's presidency, it is thought that there are 30 million illegals floating around in the United States with the full knowledge of the federal government of the United States. Our Homeland Security Director is not only a Hispanic gentleman, he is also Jewish. He used to work for the Jewish Immigrant Aid Society. And then you get into Robert Bridges' coverage of this with Russia Today just a day or two ago. This will be in your roadmap, where he demonstrates how Biden and Mayorkas are working openly with NGOs in the United States, religious NGOs, especially in the Roman Catholic community, to bring more of these people into the United States and to give them all kinds of privileges for entering the United States illegally that are denied to the average American. And then when you add to that the LGBTQ movement, just as one example, it's quite clear that we are dealing with neoconservatism, not simply in terms of international interventionism and militarism abroad, but that it has a domestic agenda for the people of the United States, and for that matter, in Western Europe, that involves a demographic revolution and cultural revolution. Patrick, are we on good ground in saying that that is what you and I might cover that is never covered by these other people, as near as I can tell?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you brought up Alejandro Mayorkas and the massive immigration. And, you know, people don't talk about that as being neocon, because neocon is it's in the foreign policy realm. But what the neocons are doing in foreign policy, and what people like Alejandro Mayorkas are doing in terms of mass immigration, are part of a very identifiable Jewish agenda. And you can't take some version of Mearsheimer's realism that states operate in their own interest. How is it in the interest of the American state as an institution, a governmental institution, or the American nation, the people, to bring in all of these random third worlders who they don't have any special skills? To the extent that they work, they're driving Uber or not even Uber, they're driving DoorDash and having babies on the public dime. It makes zero sense from the point of view of any kind of national interest, but it makes all sorts of sense from the point of view of Jewish supremacy.
Exactly, my friend. Wanted to apologize to our listeners for some of our technological problems that I think were definitely due to the same outsiders that have been harassing BT foreign policy recently. But suffice it to say that I hope we've covered some things for you. The roadmap will have all kinds of stories added this weekend. I wanted to thank our special guest, Dr. Patrick Slattery, for being on the show. I hope to be with you live 7 days from today on the Republic Broadcasting Network. God bless you.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.